Hey, Robert.
Hey, Aaron.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
It's 2024. It's our first show of the new year. So we thought we'd talk a little bit about our plans for Ingenuism and just the Ingenuism in the new year and kind of what we're looking out for and what we're anticipating. So got any ideas?
Well, I love predictions because I bat 1,000. I'm always wrong.
Absolutely.
But I am excited about 2024, both personally and from a Ingenuism perspective, because, you know, we've seen a lot of, since the pandemic, we've seen a lot of pushback against connection and against, you know, the kind of experimentation and discovery that is so important to progress. We've even seen pushback against progress, which seems like an oxymoron.
Yeah.
But we've seen it. And what I noticed by the end of 2023 is that while that knee-jerk reaction was still there in some places, it doesn't seem to have the same kind of legs or energy behind it. You know, there was a lot of objection to Marc Andreessen's elitist techno-optimism manifesto, and the fact it was a manifesto, and, you know, just that there were lots of little nitpicks with it, but the core message seemed to resonate and seems to be lasting. And, you know, we saw attempts to, you know, bring the food and game department in to make decisions about tests, whether or not SpaceX could launch rockets in Texas. We just saw a lot of things that historically, you know, would have been laughable, but recently we had to take seriously, but they didn't seem to really stick in the end, the tail end of 2023. So hopefully 2024 will be even more so.
Yeah, I definitely think that's the case in the culture, and particularly where it matters, which I think is Silicon Valley. And there seems to be a kind of a rejection of the techno-pessimism that seemed to be prevalent during, during COVID, post-COVID. It was really starting in the late 20-teens, and you've got the whole, you know, brouhaha about AI is going to kill us all. It was huge. And for a while, it kind of went unchallenged. And then Andreessen came out, and now there's this whole, we'll probably talk about this in a future episode, but there's this whole effective accelerationism movement in Silicon Valley that really is gaining steam. It started out as this pretty small, marginal thing, and now everybody seems to be talking about it. And I think it's definitely inspired by and inspiring Marc Andreessen and others. But the whole idea there is, we want to accelerate technology. We want to grow faster. Let's think of all the positives of AI. Stop thinking about all the negatives. And they're really quite good. They've got some challenges like everybody, but it's the right direction. They're pro-progress, pro-technology, and that's exciting. So I think the culture shifted. I'm also seeing some of the left of center economists, who are rejecting the not in my backyard and again, the techno-pessimism. So there's this movement, particularly among left of center, of yes in my backyard, right? People who traditionally objected to building are now pushing building. So there seems to be some momentum around that, from a culture perspective.
I definitely see the same thing. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of other things that people are going to be talking about and focused on in 2024. But when the undercurrent, when it's not the topic of mainstream conversation, but when people are just living as if they can go out and explore different ideas that they have and use their ingenuism and their ingenuity to, you know, improve their lives, and then it turns out improve other people's lives, that's when things really work. You know, I'm hoping we actually don't talk too much about this in 2024, because it's when things that we agree with are being said, it's usually in response to attempts to dial back people's opportunities to really, make a difference in the world. While when Silicon Valley is just chugging along and there's no conversation about it, that's what miracles are just happening ongoingly.
True. That's how it was in the 90s. Nobody was talking about progress. It was just happening. And I fear that, here's my pessimistic, more pessimistic side is, While I think that's all true, I do think that politicians are about a decade behind always these cultural trends. And the Biden administration certainly has shown itself to be kind of inclined towards control and regulation. And then the alternative seems to be another Trump administration. And that doesn't seem positive in terms of, you know, techno growth. So I worry that we'll be talking about this only because the opposition, for example, to this U.S. steel merger came from both Republicans and Democrats. And those tendencies that politicians have and that Washington have, and also they focus on the culture of the past rather than the dynamism of the future, is going to make this something I feel we're going to have to talk about throughout the year. Politics is going to dictate that, sadly. It is an election year, too. So
that's true. Yeah, I'm going to try and keep us away from that. Sure. So that's Yaron's first prediction, is that we're still going to have to talk about all the stuff that we don't want to talk about. My first prediction is that we're going to see a shift of the discussion of AI from the generalized, you know, we're going to make a super intelligence that's almost certainly going to kill us all, to very narrow targeted. You know, the analogy that we use is people are going to stop talking about that we're building whales and then start talking about building submarines and building, you know, other things that have a very specific purpose and are in fact, you know, much smarter in that narrow realm than anything we've ever seen before. And then on top of that, we're going to start seeing more miracles in terms of what is discovered. You know, we're seeing on a regular basis the, you know, discovery first new antibiotic with a completely different pathway that is now, you know, wildly effective against these bacteria that have evolved to be resistant to every other antibiotic out there. And now this is a completely different, it's pathway that it kills it. So, you know, it's not like it's a little bit better. It's going back to the beginning of developing antibiotics in terms of the advantages it has over the native bacterium. We're seeing immunizations that are not just for, you know, COVID or the flu, but actually for cancers. We're seeing treatments that are effective at a level that we never thought was possible with side effects that are a small fraction of what we have, you know, learned to live with when it comes to, for example, treating cancer with chemotherapy. And that kind of those kind of discoveries are going to be supported by the ability to really be connected to all of human knowledge. You know, we've talked about how the printing press and how the internet and all of these things have increased connection each time an order of magnitude. And what we're seeing now is not just being connected to in a hypothetical, like in theory you could access this information, but actually having tools that will gather it, sift out what's relevant and aggregate that so that it can be used to make discoveries that are much, much faster, but also much more profound.
Yeah, I think that's right. I'm already seeing these AI tools that are coming out that can take video in a sense, can understand the context and create short videos out of long video, can summarize a video, can summarize a text. ChatGPT could do that, but now summarize video, summarize spoken word, which is pretty amazing. And then, you know, AI that can create animation, you can give it a story and it can draw the animation, create the animation to go with the story. And you're going to see more and more tools like that. And then, of course, what you're talking about, which is taking this intersection, which I think is the most exciting, a biotech and genomic engineering and AI, and that intersection. God, I mean, what was really holding back to a large extent the gene therapy revolution and the bio revolution was just the massive computational task involved in screening, you know, all the permutation of DNA and all the permutation of these different molecules and all the part. And now you have a tool that can do it both. And they're building, you know, Microsoft is building this massive computer that'll have, you know, that has a computing power that's just unimaginable in order to be able to facilitate the AI doing all this stuff. So yes, I expect to see significant drug development and sped up. Of course, the trial, unfortunately, the whole system of trials and the whole system of the FDA is still what it is, but at least you'll be able to have a lot more candidates for that. And then just a lot more therapies. And of course, life extension, ideas around life extension and what could cure disease, extend life, improve quality of life for people who have certain diseases. I mean, the upside is massive. And this intersection of AI and biotech is truly exciting.
Now, I'll give my pessimistic prediction is that the FDA will not bring itself into the 21st century in 2024. I mean, What's happened this century so far is that we've moved from medicine being, despite the fact that we are at our core digital beings, you know, our DNA is a digital recording system. We have always imagined life and treated life as if it's analog. And in fact, that was the first big distinction between computers and people, is that people were analog. It turns out people aren't really. They're just incredibly sophisticated digital machines. And what the science has done is moved past the analog. The original gene therapies that started in the 70s, they were something that were very much put it in and see what happens and hope for the best, yep, versus actually designing something like you would program a computer. That doesn't mean it's going to work, especially the first iteration. There are bugs and you do have these things evolve and improve, but getting on that digital improvement cycle is why we're seeing these miracles. And unfortunately, our clinical trials approach is based on the view of the world and medicine as analog. I do think it will happen before 2050, that the FDA will or become irrelevant because, yeah, you know, as people find ways around, people are very good at finding ways around constraints that used to be only a little binding, because you really did need these kind of tests to make sure that your medicine that was you sort of stumbled into and wasn't designed is safe and effective. But when it's designed, you need a whole different test regime, and that'll come one way or another.
No, and really the COVID vaccines were really a great illustration of that. I think I read, you know, we talked about this in Moderna and BioNTech vaccines were designed in 2 days. Once they had the genome of the virus, within 2 days, the computer spat out the design of the vaccine, and nothing really changed from that. From then, it was just a question of producing it. And that was pretty quick. And then it was testing it and the tests. And even there, the test for is it going to kill you or not? that was done pretty quickly. And then it was the trial 3 test, which prolonged it from probably the summer into the late fall in terms of actual approval by the FDA and use. But even then, it was very fast. The FDA, when it wants, in a sense, it showed us, approve things pretty fast. And yeah, a vaccine for epidemic is urgent, but so is something that treats cancer for the people who are dying of it right now. And so is something that treats so many other things. And you'd think that they'd learn from COVID to find ways to accelerate these drug approvals, particularly these drugs that are basically designed on a computer and then manufactured.
Exactly. And the sad thing is about the COVID vaccine is while it was done unbelievably quickly from in terms of identifying the candidate to actually getting shots into people's arms, it was still took 3 times longer than it needed to.
Yep.
And it doesn't mean that you would have given the exact, like moved everything 6 months forward, but you could have moved a lot of things 6 months forward, some things 4 months forward, some things 2 months. And you know, the number of lives saved is somewhere in the 100,000 to the million range if you had done that. So we talk about we have to slow things down in order to protect people. But the fact is, slowing things down is killing people. And it's not always that explicit, but it's always true. You know, nuclear power, which is one of our favorite drums to be, if we had gone into the ingenuism, experimentation, improvement, learning cycle in the 60s, you know, we would have the Lexus of nuclear reactors right now, that you just turn it on and it runs. And it runs for 30 years, needs very little maintenance. Now, you know, people could object to that, but it's really on you to argue why that isn't true, because in every area that we've been allowed to apply our ingenuity and improve, that's what we've seen. Way more reliable, way less, more maybe even more complicated, but way less maintenance, way less, far fewer problems that actually happen. And if we had moved to nuclear power, whether you know you're worried about global warming, whether you're worried about particulates in the atmosphere, whatever you're worried about,
just cheap, abundant electricity. You know,
people dying because they don't have access to energy.
Yeah,
you know, and we're talking about millions, tens of millions, possibly hundreds of millions of lives lost because we slowed down that particular technology, and that is the rule. And that's why when, you know, the effective accelerationists take it to an extreme, you know, a lot of them believe, well, if we do create AI, it's just a natural progression in the universe, just like, you know, people are here and dinosaurs aren't, that's how it should go and no problem. Now, I'm a nativist when it comes to humanity. So I'm not in favor of creating something that will replace us.
Yeah.
But I also think it's unavoidable.
Yep.
You know, that there is a certain amount of progress that will happen, you know, whether
given the progress is also in biotech, the progress might actually be where we change with the technology. That is, we start tinkering with what we are, and, you know, so I don't think human beings are going to go away. I just think human beings are going to change, and they're going to start applying technology to themselves, both biologically and digitally, in the sense of, you know, Elon Musk is already planting chips in people's brains. It's just a question of how sophisticated, how complex those chips become and what they can actually do. What I don't want is the government planting chips in my brain, but as long as we assume
that Elon's okay,
the right thing.
No, and that's another good point, is that a lot of times when people say we need to slow down, they don't mean I need to slow down. They mean you need to slow down.
Yep.
And, you know, that's both, you know, egregious in a freedom sense, but it's also extremely, what's the right word for it? I don't want to overstate it, but, you know, it's very arrogant. And
it's very arrogant.
It's to make those kind of decisions for other people, and to think that you know what's going to happen in 2024, such that you should be deciding what's going to happen in 2024.
Well, I'm encouraged by this fact that I think this idea that there's a cost to not progressing, that is the cost of not growing, there's more of a realization than I've seen in a long time. So that seems to be bubbling to the surface again. I think Marc Andreessen did a lot to bring that to the forefront. The opportunity cost, what we in finance call opportunity cost, is real. And it's huge. It's massive. I think this relates to economic growth generally, but something like if the United States had grown at 1% less a year over the last, I don't know, 60, 70 years, we'd be poorer than Mexico, right? Small changes over a long period of times have huge impacts. And every time we delay a technology or delay progress, there are massive consequences to us in the future and to future generations.
That is 100% true. And not just to us, but to everyone on the planet, because yep. Progress spreads and it doesn't all happen in Silicon Valley. But when you start to choke off the places that have produced the most extreme innovations, then that's when you are really paying a high cost. So I am with you. And that is part of why I think the pendulum is swinging back. I do see the same thing, that people are not willing to say, yeah, I'm going to impoverish my children and my grandchildren so I can, you know, accomplish some modest change today.
Good. Well, it looks like we're going to have a good 2024. So plenty to talk about, a lot of new progress, a lot of new things happening. And we'll all get, healthier, richer, more interesting lives as a consequence.
Cheers to that.
See you next week, or in 2 weeks, actually. Bye.